This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. A major global car company tried to prank the press this week, and now they're paying the price for that, so we'll tell you all about it. America on the Road is brought to you by Mercury Insurance and DrivingToday.com. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much money you could save. Get a quote today at MercuryInsurance.com. Hi, I'm Jack D. Redd. With me is co-host Chris Teague. Chris is based in Maine. He writes for DrivingToday.com, of course, for Ford Authority, Forbes.com, and for some others. Thanks for being with us, Chris. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jack. I realize this is early in the morning for you left coast people. How's it going over there?
It's going well. As we are recording this, it is somewhat early in the morning. I think others might say it's not all that early, but we're closing in on 8 o'clock in the morning. So I need another cup of coffee, maybe, but we'll get through the show without any difficulty. I hope things are going well for you in Maine. Is spring springing up in Maine?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. And this is totally not a car show topic, but ended up raking my yard yesterday because the previous owner of our new house hadn't done so and found several bulbs that are about to flower. So hopefully we'll have some spring in our lives soon.
Ah, very cool. Well, we're coming up on Easter, so maybe some Easter lilies are among them. So there's that. Today, our special guest is Paul Fisher. He is the product planning manager on a car we like a lot, the Kia Stinger. The Stinger, of course, is a car that has been very influential at Kia, and we'll give you details on that coming up. He has the inside story, certainly, on the Stinger. In the road test segment, we'll take a look at some cars that you might say are competitors to the Stinger. The Lexus IS350 F Sport Sedan is the car you're testing. Chris, any initial thoughts on that car?
Yes, it's very similar to the other IS sedans that I've driven and owned over the years. So they've just refined it and keep doing so.
Ah, well, as a owner or former owner of an IS, you certainly are well equipped to review that car. I'm going to take a look at the Cadillac CT5. That's a sports luxury sedan that is essentially a competitor, I think, to the IS and to others in that of that ilk. So that should be an interesting combination of road test vehicles this week. So let's dive into the latest in the automotive news, and I alluded to this earlier on. Earlier this week, I think a couple days before the 1st of April, Volkswagen put out a press release suggesting that it was going to change its name in the United States to Volkswagen, with V-O-L-T-S, Wagen, as opposed to with a K, kind of a near pun, and saying it was a public declaration of the company's future forward investment in e-mobility. Many of our fellow press members kind of took this hook, line, and sinker and wrote this as fact, put this out there as fact. I was fairly skeptical about this and I kind of couched the whole thing as a potential April Fool's Day joke and never really printed anything about it based on the fact that I thought it was going to be an April Fool's Day joke. And it turned out to be so. What's your take on this whole thing? A publicity stunt, basically.
Yeah, you know, I didn't really buy into it either, but I can see both sides of the coin. You know, you mentioned our colleagues in the media. They, after having contacted Volkswagen's PR staff, were told point blank that it was not a joke, and then ran with that as the fact. You know, some people say, well, that's the point of a prank, right? You don't ever admit the gag until it's time. But I think maybe VW could have done a little bit better in maybe stepping in before, you know, so many stories went out, so many people were paid or owed money for writing those stories and so on. So I think they kind of realized after things, once the cat got out of the bag, it started growing and exploding quickly over the internet. So maybe they could have approached that a little bit differently. But, you know, if their point was to get the word out on their EV programs coming up, they certainly did that.
Yeah, they certainly got attention. And if your idea of good public relations is just getting ink, you know, getting your name in the paper, getting your name out there, I mean, they did that. And they certainly associated themselves with electric vehicles. At the same time, I think they burned a lot of people in the press by doing this, and particularly by confirming the fact that this was real. When you ask for confirmation about something, and I think at that point you should fess up. And I was talking to one of the key PR people at a different car company yesterday. I was on an event and discussed this with him, and we kind of had the same feeling that you really, as a PR person, don't want to burn and make fools of essentially the people you're trying to serve, and that is the media. It just strikes me as way the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, and having been in the situation, and you have too, I'm sure, where you need a story out the door and it's due, you know, in an hour, and you're relying on that person to give you the information you need to get the right information to your readers. It's a real trip, real fly in the ointment, so to speak, if that person misleads you, and then in turn you end up misleading your reader, joke or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it also had the unintended consequence of dredging up this whole scandal that they had about the diesel vehicles and essentially faking the emissions performance, the exhaust emissions performance of diesel. I mean, it dredged that all up. In a lot of these stories mentioned that, and the fact that they were trying to reinvent the brand yet again. So I just think it was kind of misguided.
Yeah, I think, you know, today we're recording this on April Fool's Day, but I think maybe a couple of social media posts this morning, you know, given that it is the day of jokes, would have been appropriate and maybe have had somewhat of the same positive effect without the negativity surrounding it.
Well, I think you have a story for us. What's new with you?
I do. I think it's interesting. You and I have talked about this with the last couple of Subarus that I've brought to the show here, and that Subaru loves to listen to their customers and tailor products to what those people are going to be doing. And the latest example of that is the 2022 Subaru Outback Wilderness, which is their wagon. My family owns an Outback from a few years ago, but still will have the same 2.4-liter engine that the other models do and a continuously variable transmission. But it'll get 17-inch wheels and Yokohama Geolander tires, which are, you know, kind of off-road oriented tires. It'll have an electronically controlled crawl ratio so they can get better rock crawling and off-road performance. Then it'll get a mild lift with the skid plate and some other off-roady equipment. And despite the fact that I think it looks kind of silly, I can't deny that it's an answer to what people are already doing with their cars.
Yeah, well... I guess silliness is maybe the order of the day here. we're seeing a lot of that going on. Here's something, though, that isn't so silly, and it could affect you, especially if you're a potential pickup truck buyer. Ford has basically canceled a bunch of overtime at multiple plants, including the plants that build the F-150, because of the chip shortage that's going around. There is this microchip shortage that is plaguing the industry right now as it's kicking back into gear. And thus, you're going to see fewer F-150s being built. That can only up the price of the ones that are out there or make it very difficult for you to find the one you want and the color you want with the equipment you want. And Chevrolet has approached this in somewhat different way. What they have done is they've eliminated the fuel efficiency cylinder deactivation system on some of their Silverado pickups. So they don't need that particular chip and can go on building Silverado pickups without that. You lack a little bit in fuel economy. It says it costs it 1 mile per gallon on the EPA cycle. But they're going on building 5.3-liter V8-equipped Silverados and GMC Sierras without that chip. Kind of an interesting approach. What's your take on that, Chris?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard to, I don't know, 1 mile per gallon is 1 mile per gallon, but it's hard to imagine that it's a great business practice to build incomplete vehicles. But on the other hand, you know, this is a problem that Ford does not need, having delayed the Bronco several times now for COVID and other reasons. Now their brand new pickup truck that was already, you know, ultra popular, but the newer model, the 2021, is extremely even more popular, I guess. So not a problem they need. So I don't know. I think if you're a buyer, I would wait it out if you can stand to do that. But from an automaker perspective, you know, I guess if you're okay building without that chip and without that module on the engine, go for it. But, you know, the buyer would probably ultimately suffer in the end.
Yeah, I don't know that they're going to suffer too much from 1 mile per gallon, but it is a kind of a problem, I guess, to not have that technology you thought you might have in that vehicle. I'm sure it will be made plain to people who are buying those pickup trucks. And I think that's going to be the case through the end of this model year, at least in the Silverado and Sierra pickup trucks. So with that particular engine, the 5.3 V8, which is one of their bread and butter engines. So that's going to happen.
You're probably right. I might even ask the question, could it be retrofitted later? But I'm not sure how that all works out from an engineering standpoint.
Yeah, I'd hate to have to deal with that, I think, in the service department of my local Chevy dealer. But yeah, who knows? When we come back, we're going to be doing some road testing of some pretty cool sports sedans. So the Lexus IS 350 F Sport and the Cadillac CT5 550T. So we'll tell you all what all that means when we come back. So with Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you. And thanks so much for being with us on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad with you for road test time on America on the Road. We, of course, live to drive. You certainly live to drive, don't you, Chris?
Oh, yeah. That's all I want to do.
Yeah. And we wish, between the writing, we actually get to drive a lot of cars. But there's a lot of writing and reporting involved in this task, too, isn't there? It's not a bad thing.
There is some hard work behind the scenes. Yes, it's not all glitz and glamour.
Yeah. But on the other hand, you had the glitz and glamour of driving the Lexus IS 350 F Sport sedan. So tell us about it.
Yes, I did. And I've maintained this for many years, and I'll say it again here. I think the IS in almost any generation is one of the best looking sedans that has been made in the past 20 or so years. And I still think that's true for the new model as well. But this is the 2021 Lexus IS 350. This is the F Sport trim that I tested with all-wheel drive. And like all IS 350s, this has a 3.5 liter V6 that puts down 311 horsepower and 280 pound-feet of torque. And though the F-Sport package has the word sport in it, it does not touch the drivetrain. It actually is just really an appearance package more than anything else. And, you know, it's a great appearance package, 19-inch wheels, blacked-out trim outside, some nice interior touches, a special steering wheel. But, man, what a great-looking car inside and out. The cabin is very nicely finished, very few cheap feel plastics, everything you'd expect from a Lexus, especially in the, you know, around $50,000 mark, even though it is kind of the quote unquote entry level Lexus in this country. The Toyota Lexus infotainment system has been improved greatly, and it's on full display in this car. We had a 10.3 inch infotainment touchscreen that's mounted much closer to the driver than it was in previous years, so it's a lot easier to reach and see. Even the trackpad system has been improved, so it's not quite as finicky, and you can either use the touchscreen to control your music and everything else, or the touchpad, which, again, is right behind the gear shift right in the center console there. I didn't actually mind it. I think it works a little bit better than in previous years and in other applications, some like the Mercedes-Benz system. What do you think about the alternate controls, Jack?
They kind of bug me. And I think, you know, and we've talked about this before, in that we believe... we don't have this empirically, but I think we believe that if you have it over time, it will bug you less, or maybe you'll just get totally used to it and on you go. You think that would happen?
You know, so the car is being picked up as I'm saying this sentence. I'm watching the delivery person take it away and drop something else off. And in the past 7 days, I found myself reaching for the touchscreen more just out of habit. So the fact that it's available may become more convenient over time. But having used it for 7 days, my initial reaction is to reach for the touchscreen, even with the touchpad being available and improved for that matter. So I don't know. I think that over time, people probably would get used to it. But if you've been used to a touchscreen, your you know, muscle memory is to reach for the dash.
Yeah, and I think as you're driving, you want to do the easiest thing. I think you kind of naturally and the most intuitive or even reflex kind of thing. And thus you're, because you don't want to distract yourself, I think it's a kind of self-preservation. You don't want to distract yourself from the driving that is so important in keeping you safe. So I just think the simplest solutions are the best in those kind of situations. You know, we've talked about touchscreens before, and I'm not a fan of finger marks all over the dash and all over the touchscreen, and that's kind of, you know, disgusting in its own way. But I think we've come to understand how touchscreens work and use them, so there you go.
Yeah, I agree. But the more important thing is how the car actually drives and feels, and true to being a Lexus. It's smooth and buttery in almost every circumstance, despite being what most people would consider to be a sports sedan. And I've also, you know, I owned a 2010 IS250 all-wheel drive and a 2014 IS350. And in both of them, I said this, and I'll say it again here, and it's not going to be as negative as it sounds, but the cars tend to have a lot of the drawbacks of sports sedans without a lot of the sort of sports sedan pros that you get. So what do I mean by that? Well, the engine, you know, puts out 311 horsepower. The car with all-wheel drive still scoots to 60 miles an hour in a little bit less than 6 seconds, which would have been stellar, you know, 15 years ago, and still feels strong today, but it's outdone by a lot of its competition. Now, on the other hand, you get, you know, very smooth power delivery, a really nice throttle response, not a lot of noise, and even the ride on the big 19-inch wheels isn't bad. Everything seems, you're almost cocooned in the cabin there. The seats are very comfortable, but then the other things from sports sedans start to creep back in. So the back seat is small, the roof is low. So me at 6 feet tall, as the driver, I was fighting with legroom with my 8-year-old daughter who rides behind me in a booster seat. And so that might irk some parents. And then my 4-year-old, who is tall enough but doesn't weigh enough to get out of her full-size car seat just yet, still has to climb in and under the really short roof, and she's very close to the top of the car, which is uncomfortable for her. So some drawbacks there. But on the upside, like I said, the car is very comfortable. If you're a one or two person family and want a sporty car but a lot of comfort, this is probably going to be one of your better picks, especially, you know, with Lexus reliability and the warranty and everything that comes with it. But overall, I enjoy the car. I've owned two of them, so I can't deny that I like them. I do think that there are sportier options out there, but I don't think a lot of them can deliver the smoothness and the sort of comfort that the Lexus does at the same time.
Yeah, well, maybe I was driving one of them, and we'll talk a bit about that. What I did want to point out, though, is you mentioned the fact that you're 6 feet tall, and that is something that has been missing from the last several episodes of this show. So I congratulate you for that, and I'm glad to see that little bit of information is back in America on the Road. So good on you.
Well, it's very relevant here. I think that was a needed stat to throw in.
You know, whenever you tell us how tall you are, it does seem to fit in. It's not just egregious that you're just tossing it out of the blue. It does make some sense. And there it is again. So hooray for you. I was driving the Cadillac CT5, and I think the secret super cool version. Now, we've all talked about the V-Series Cadillacs, and they're great. They're also very expensive and maybe beyond what most people need. The vehicle I was driving, the CT5 version that I was driving, was what they call the 550T. That has a bit of a detuned version of the 3-liter V6 that is also in the V-Series, and it offers 335 horsepower, so outdoing the IS by a few horsepower, several horsepower, a significant amount of horsepower probably. And this was just one sweetheart of a sports sedan. I had not been in a CT5 or too many Cadillac sports sedans over the course of the last 2 or 3 years. It just wasn't on my test schedule so much. And I found this to be just a delightful car in a bunch of different ways. Not only its looks, the fastback styling, and is very clean. I think it's a very good-looking car. And it does, at the same time, it doesn't look like every other car out there. I mean, you gushed a little bit about the IS, and I know that's your taste, and that's a good-looking car. I think in my instance, I like this vehicle, and I particularly like it in the flesh, you know, in the sheet metal, as opposed to seeing it in pictures. I don't think pictures really do it justice. In this particular configuration, the 550T configuration, with 335 horsepower, it will go to 60 miles an hour from a standing stop in just 5 seconds. So that's pretty good. It's not supercar territory, certainly. You could get 19-inch wheels and Michelin all-season tires on the car if you're of a want to do that. Those aren't necessarily the grippiest of all tires, but I think the person who is buying this car is not necessarily going to squeal the tires around every corner, so probably just fine. A lot to like about the cabin, including, and my oldest daughter pointed this out to me again yesterday, the wood trim. The wood trim is not heavily varnished or finished. It's more of a matte type of finish, which I think is very cool and very upscale looking. And the way the infotainment system works is terrific. It has great leather seats with plenty of front legroom. It is a little narrow, I would say, in terms of the cabin. It has a 10-inch diagonal touchscreen. We talked a bit about touchscreen stuff. And Cadillac is really up their infotainment system. It used to be one of the poorest among GM, maybe the poorest. It is now works much better, and they have put actual knobs and buttons on this thing to help you along the way, so that is good. This is a vehicle with rear drive architecture. It can also be had as an all-wheel drive car. It has a 5-link independent rear suspension, so that's high zoot, kind of the preferred kind of suspension in the vehicle, and actually kind of an adaptation of the McPherson strut front suspension. Struts aren't necessarily upscale, but I think the way they have modified this, it's a pretty cool deal. So what's your take on the CT5 overall, Chris? I'm gushing here.
I liked it. I think we actually talked about it a few months ago. It felt a little bigger than I would really like from a sports sedan, but overall, man, what a comfortable car. And you are right. You know, I did gush about the Lexus and its appearance, but Cadillac has done a great job with their sedans in the years, and the CT5 is a great example. Long lines, sharp edges, really a great looker from, you know, from the curb and motion too. But I like the infotainment system, and the Cadillac user experience system has been improved in recent years. They've done a great job with it. It's colorful, it's responsive. So all around, I like the CT5, and I think I tested a little bit less exciting version than you did, but still a great car.
Yeah, magnetic ride control, of course, so it handles really well and yet rides beautifully, a nice combination thereof. So limited slip differential available. Just a lot to like overall on this particular vehicle. And like I say, this is maybe the one to get. It's not as expensive. Not that the CT5Vs are super expensive. A CT5V can be had for less than $50,000. But this vehicle at probably the mid to high 40s, equipped as you would want it to be, the CT5 550T is certainly one to pick out, I think.
I agree.
So two big winners this week on in our road test segment. And when we come back, we will be taking your listener questions. So stay with us for that. Listener questions coming up with Chris Teague. This is Jack Nerad with you, and you're listening to America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. Jack Nerad back with you, and it is listener question time. Yes, we love to take your listener questions. It's so easy to get them to us. And we'd love to hear from you if you send your listener question to editor@drivingtoday.com, editor@drivingtoday.com. We'll answer your question on an upcoming show. So, and tell us, you know, where you are and what your question is. Of course, if you don't tell us what your question is, we can't ask it on the show and then answer it. So that seems fairly straightforward. Here is a listener question that we got recently. This is from a listener in Northern Michigan, I think. And it is, are there competitors to the Chrysler Pacifica? Of course, that's the Chrysler Pacifica minivan that I should be looking at before I buy. What do you think, Chris?
I think it's an excellent question, and it's a funny topic because minivans in general have been cut way back in the past 10 or 15 years. But yeah, I think two models come to mind, and you may either agree or disagree. And the first is the Toyota Sienna. The 2021 Sienna is all hybrid all the time now, so great fuel savings. It can be equipped with all-wheel drive. The top trims are plush and luxurious, just like the top trims of the Pacifica. So yay for the Toyota Sienna. And then the other one is an upcoming model that I haven't driven yet. Maybe you have, but the Kia Carnival is coming as their replacement minivan. And it looks to be very compelling, both from a value standpoint, as many Kias are, and then just an interior fit and finish standpoint. It looks extremely upscale. So I think it might be worth checking that one out when it comes to market. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, you identified two of them that I would have pointed to. I probably would have pointed immediately to the Sienna. Of course, another maybe elephant in the room is the Honda Odyssey. That has been the traditional major competitor to the Chrysler Pacifica and other Chrysler and Dodge minivans through the years, and it is still a great vehicle. I think it's probably due for a total revamp fairly soon, but that doesn't mean that the current model isn't a great minivan. It really is, and I think in a lot of ways it's the most fun to drive minivan. Now, maybe that's kind of not what you're looking for in a minivan, but there's a lot of driving enjoyment, just overall driving satisfaction. And by that I mean it's not a sports vehicle in any way, shape, or form, but it is responsive. It handles the way you would like it to handle, and you never feel like you're being beaten up by driving the vehicle, or it's not doing what you want. It feels too floaty or weird or something like that. So, of course, the Chrysler Pacifica is a great minivan. I mean, minivans were invented, at least they say, by Dodge and Chrysler, by that company, Chrysler Corporation, in those years. And you could argue the point, because my family, when I was a kid, we used to drive in a Chevy Greenbrier van, and then we had a Chevy van after that. So one could say those might have been minivans too, a couple decades earlier. But in any case, there are a lot of good minivans out there, and certainly the Sienna, I think I've been really enamored of that, and as you say, all hybrid vehicle the last time I drove it, so I think it was terrific. I think the NERAD family had it around Thanksgiving time, and we did a little Thanksgiving trip in it, it's certainly a vehicle that I would endorse.
Absolutely. And even though you can get the Pacifica with all-wheel drive now, the Sienna with all-wheel drive is a tank in the snow, which I can vouch for personally. So if you live in a place that gets weather consistently throughout the winter, which I do, either would probably be a good choice.
True enough. True enough. And this person in northern Michigan, I think, might be looking at all-wheel drive as a, as an option. So there's that. Well, here's another question we got. And this is either an urban myth or not, depending, and I love your take on this. The question is this: is it really better to buy a car at the end of the month?
That's a great question. Having never worked in a car dealership myself, but having done lots of research on the topic, I can say it probably depends. It depends on the dealership, it depends on the volume that they're moving, and it depends probably even on the salesperson that you get when you show up at the dealership. It has been said that many of these stores, you know, can see customers coming from a mile away, especially at the end of the month when they're looking for deals and may be resistant to that. But I think it probably depends. What do you think?
Well, I think it stems from the fact that many dealerships, virtually all dealerships, I think, are looking at monthly sales goals, many imposed upon them by the manufacturers of the vehicles that they sell. And there are advantages to them in meeting those sales goals, and there are monetary advantages. So then the thinking is, because they want to meet those goals at the end of the month, when they're scrambling to meet those goals, they'll be more likely to give you a great deal than they would at the beginning of the month. Now, when you look at this, and we're actually recording the show at the beginning of baseball season, so let me use a little bit of a baseball analogy. The games you win in September are equal to the games you win in April, and vice versa. So the vehicles you sell at the beginning of the month are also going to figure into whether you make that incentive or not. So I think a lot of dominoes really have to fall for the end of the month to be a great time to buy a car. It's not a bad time to buy a car. My recommendation always, and I'm the guy who wrote the Complete Idiot's Guide to Buying or Leasing a Car, so I did quite a bit of research on this, is buy a car when you're prepared to deal. When you're rested, when you know the facts, when you know what the vehicle you're about to buy should cost in the marketplace, when you know what your trade-in should be worth in the marketplace, and you're ready to engage with a dealer. I think that's the best time to buy a car. Whether that's at the end of the month, in the beginning of the month, or in the middle of the month, I think is less material than your preparation to make that deal.
I think that's a great point, Jack. And, you know, as I said, it depends. But, you know, the end of the month is probably as good a time to buy a car as any other, especially if you're ready to make the deal and you're able to walk in armed with the facts and get the get the price that you're looking for on the vehicle that you want.
Right. I think a lot of people believe that you just walk in at the end of the month and you're going to get a better deal than walking in at the beginning of the month. That's not going to happen for you. If you're prepared to deal exactly as you say, Chris, then the end of the month is a mighty fine time to buy a car. And we're now talking at the beginning of a particular month, the beginning of April. So you guys have all month to sort this out for yourselves. Well, when we come back, we'll be talking with Paul Fisher. He is the product planning manager of a car we like a whole lot. It is the Kia Stinger. And so stay with us for that. We'll be talking to Paul Fisher when we come back. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you, and we thank you so much for being with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad with you, and we have a real special guest for you today. We're so proud to have him on the show. We've talked a bit about his car, and we've talked about his car for a while now as a vehicle we liked. His name is Paul Fisher. He is the Stinger product manager for Kia Motors. Paul, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Hey, Jack. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Let's talk about Stinger, because there is new news, as they say, for Stinger for, I guess, 2022. Tell us what that news is.
So 2022 is our minor change year. So we've got a few improvements on the car, and it kind of marks the midway through the life cycle of the vehicle. So pretty excited about the developments on the program.
You know, certainly in industry terms, it might be a minor change year, but for a lot of us who are outside, there are major changes to this car that make it even better, and this is a car we've liked a lot. So tell us a bit about the horsepower increase on the base car, for example, Paul.
Yeah, so that's a pretty important detail there. So our base Stinger GT line previously featured a 2-liter turbo engine that produced about 255 horsepower. For 2022, we've got an all-new 2.5-liter four-cylinder turbo that's producing 300 horsepower. So pretty substantial increase in base horsepower there, about 45 horses. And, you know, an all-new power plant with slightly larger displacement going from 2-liter to 2.5. So the driving character of the engine is really, it's really nice. It's very nicely balanced. It's very well-tuned. And it's a really good base engine. We're really, really happy with it.
Yeah, I would say added power and torque on that base car just would make what was already good just that much better. Talk a bit about how that helps drivability to have a little more power, a little more torque.
Yeah, so really, for me, when I drive the car, the first thing I notice is that, you know, it feels very balanced and nimble. You know, the 2-liter was, you know, a little bit peaky. It had to, you know, get going a little bit, and then, you know, it would hit its torque band. But the 2.5 has got much more flat torque band. So you get earlier power delivery, get a little more grunt off the line. And then, you know, it just adds to the character of the car. It makes it very crisp and light. The other engine, the V6 twin turbo engine, is 368 horsepower, and it's that one is also got three more horsepower for a 22 model year. But, you know, it's a nice combination. So you can take your pick now of power plants, and, you know, either way you go, you're going to come out with a winning combination.
Yeah, and you're going to have nice performance and nice performance feel, and you're going to feel good about yourself. What are some of the other changes for 2022 in the Stinger, Paul?
For 2022, we've got some very, you know, some exterior updates. We've got new wheels, a new 18-inch wheel design, a new 19-inch wheel design. We've got a new headlight on the base car, which we call our MFR LED. It gives a kind of a menacing, sinister look, and that's on the GT line and the GT1. The GT2, of course, continues with the projector LED headlight that it currently has. In the back, speaking of lights, we've got an all-new taillight design, a new taillight graphic, which is really, really nice looking. It's one continuous LED band going across the entire width, updates the back of the car, gives it a very modern, fresh look, and it kind of accentuates the width of the car. So, you know, anytime we talk about width, kind of the understanding or the takeaway from the customer is that it's increasing its stability, because width kind of equals stability, and that stability is a performance term. So The back of the car has a new tail light, and then we've also got larger exhaust tip finishers, and that's really a nod to the substantial increase in the base horsepower.
Yeah, you like that. Well, let's talk a little bit about light signature, because that seems like it's something that's currently talked about a lot. You know, what the car looks like at night, and both from front and rear. How important do you think that is for folks these days?
You know, it's really the personality of the car. And a lot of people, well, you know, a lot of OEMs now are using some kind of a signature LED look, and it helps define the personality of the car and what brand that is. And so you're right, you know, people attach the image of the vehicle to the LED light signature that they're seeing. And, you know, Stinger, no exception. We've got a, you know, a distinctive look on that car with the MFR LED headlight, the daytime running lights, really give that car kind of a focused look from the front. And then, you know, previously the Stinger had the outer tail light rings illuminated at night. And then that's replaced now by this one long horizontal strip in the back. So, you know, very distinctive, quickly identifiable as the new Stinger.
Which is nice, right? I mean, having something new out there and something visually new, I think probably is going to help you.
Yeah, spices it up.
Let's talk a bit about Stinger. Certainly was a game changer, I think, for Kia. It changed the nature of the Kia brand, and I think probably a harbinger of other things you're trying to do at Kia. Talk a bit about that, you know, how it came to be and, you know, what it has meant for the brand.
This is a really fun question. I absolutely love it when I get to answer this question. I was lucky enough to be in product planning when we had a phenomenal success with the Optima in, what year was that? It was the game-changing Optima, and it caused a serious uptick in volume and recognition to the brand. And that Optima was a just spectacular-looking car. It was just phenomenally gorgeous. And we saw such a rise in volume, you know, on that program. And immediately we had all of these newcomers to the brand. And at the time, you know, we started to talk about where are people going to go when, you know, they come back looking for a new car? You know, where are they going to graduate to? What are we going to have for them? You know, that's going to be kind of like the next step after this gorgeous Optima. And that was really how the whole beginning of that GT concept began, was, you know, we wanted to be able to retain people in the brand with a car that would kind of pick up where that Optima left off. And so, you know, we really, you know, kind of determined that what we needed was a fun, young at heart, youthful, sporty, you know, car. And then, you know, the Grand Touring concept came out, and everybody just resonated with that very well. And that concept car turned into the Stinger, and they're very close in image. You know, that concept car is very honest to what, you know, the Stinger came to be in production. So if you look at the Stinger and you see the side graphic of the windows, it really has the feeling of that Optima in it. And it's done exactly what, you know, we wanted it to do. It's given the brand a sporty, youthful image. It's given buyers something to buy that, you know, is fun. And, you know, it's done very well. It's really brought in that customer, and it's kind of shown what Kia can do, you know, how beautiful of a car we can make.
Well, and I think there are a couple takeaways. One is styling and design really sells cars. I think as a product planner, you're probably onto that one. But expand on that a little bit and how it's expressed itself in Stinger and other things that you're doing at Kia.
You know, we have a very, very good design team. You know, we really do know how to make beautiful cars. And the Stinger, you know, with that very long hood, you know, there's a lot of industry terms that I could use here, but it has the proportions and the stance of a Grand Touring vehicle. And that really resonates with people. And they don't always understand why, but that long hood that long dash to axle and that rear cabin, you know, set over those powerful rear haunches really gives the car, you know, a powerful look. And really what that look does is it makes you want it. So, you know, and that carries through in a lot of, you know, all the other cars that we have. We have a very strong design team. And, you know, even though the vehicles are in different segments, they all kind of elicit the same response, you know, all the way from the Telluride to, you know, an Optima or a Forte or any other vehicle in the lineup. It's instantly resonating with prospective buyers as a vehicle that they just want it. You know, interestingly, my neighbors just bought a brand new Telluride, and I was talking to them yesterday, and they said they just absolutely love the car. They love the way it looked. That's the power of design.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. And I saw a Telluride, I think, yesterday, and it just said to myself, and here I am a jaded car guy and for 40 years or so, that is a good-looking vehicle. That just has a good face on it, and it is a good-looking vehicle. They've done a great job with that. Let's talk about, it's kind of ironic, I guess, that Optima spurred this, and now Optima is gone and replaced by a vehicle that's kind of continuing in the sporty heritage of Stinger. Talk a bit about that transition, would you?
Yeah, so the Optima is replaced by the K5. It's a change in the name, you know, really meant to tie in with the global naming convention of the car. You know, around the world, it's known as K5. And really, that car is, you know, all new with all-wheel drive and, you know, whole new interior and exterior design language. And, you know, really, there was some concern that, you know, it would kind of impede on the Stinger's area a little bit. But, you know, really, those two cars are so different that I think they stay out of each other's way quite nicely. But, you know, they give the prospective buyers exactly what they want. You know, the person that's shopping the K5 is in a different price point. They have a different need that they want from the car. And the person that's shopping the Stinger is, you know, in another price point, and they're planning to do something different with the car. And the driving dynamics of those two cars are very different. One being based on, you know, a front wheel drive platform, and the Stinger, of course, being based on a rear wheel drive platform. So those cars, you know, they play quite nicely together. To be honest, they share the showroom nicely, and the buyers of those cars are different target customers with different usage.
And at the same time, I think you've added some performance aspects to K5 that Optima never had. Looking at the Stinger maybe is the inspiration to that. Am I right about that?
Possibly, yeah. You know, we use the GT line trim name as a way to kind of signal to customers that, you know, hey, this is the sporty one. And, you know, a lot of those themes kind of carry over in all of the GT lines, you know, a darker wheel that's, you know, larger wheel with, you know, lower profile tire and a little bit more sporty, you know, design language on the exterior. And so, you know, of course, the GT line Stinger, you know, it's kind of trickling down to the K5, if you will. That's totally true.
You kind of pioneered for the Kia brand. You know, Stinger was at a higher price point than practically anything you'd ever sold. You know, maybe there was an SUV that was up there, and I don't know what that would be, a Sorento, mm-hmm. At that price point or something like that. But talk a bit about the challenge there of stretching the brand that had been known for high quality but inexpensive cars to something that's much sportier and more, as they say in the industry, something you aspire to as an aspirational car as opposed to a transportation car.
Sure.
Tell me about
that. Sure, yeah. And that's really, again, that's the power of design and the power of emotion. And, you know, when you look at the Stinger and you drive it and you experience the way that it feels and the way that it makes you feel, it's a very personal cockpit. It's very driver-oriented. It's fun. It wants to be thrown around, you know, and that feeling that you get from that is something that you'll pay for. So yeah, while we, did have a higher transaction price on that car, and really when we came to market with that car, the V6 twin turbo all wheel drive, GT2 is really the highest of those cars that sits at the very top of the lineup. And, surprisingly, we had a very rich mix of that car. So, again, that car has a competitive set that's very broad. And, people that look at that car and consider that car, if they wanted to compare it to a German competitor, they may be close in price, but the German competitor will not have, a V6. They'll have a four cylinder. The German competitor may only be rear wheel or front wheel drive, while the Stinger will be all wheel drive. So, while it's got a higher price point, per se, you're getting a lot of bang for your buck. You've got a great technology story. You've got a great powertrain story. You've got the all-wheel drive, and then the interior treatment is very nice. Napa leather on the GT2, for example. As opposed to regular leather on a competitive car. So, it's a higher price point, but the feeling that it gives you, the emotional reward that it gives you, and then what you would get from a competitor, it all pencils out. It makes sense. The same thing happens down on the GT line range of the scale too, because our competitive set is broad, as I said before, and we're also competing with domestic cars like Charger, Camaro, Mustang. So that's giving an honest rear wheel drive driving experience. And again, at that price point, you've got a great vehicle. Standard leather, a lot of tech, a great design, and a great driving experience. So, we kind of look at the value end of things rather than the price, because the price only tells part of the story.
What are the cross shops? I'm really curious about that.
The cross shops, up at the upper end, typically the A5 Sportback, Mercedes C-Class, Infiniti, the BMW 4 Series Grand Coupe. That car is actually not in production right now. It's taking a break, but that five-door GT-styled car. And then down on the four-cylinder side, we've got cars like, the Charger, the Camaro, the Mustang. We even see large cars like we call large cars are actually Maxima, Avalon, another car that typically we see is Acura. They don't make a rear drive car, and all of their vehicles are front wheel drive, and we will see some Acura interplay in there too.
Yeah, and of course Acura has a lot of all wheel drive mm-hmm. vehicles as well on the sporty side, so it kind of makes sense that would be cross shop. Well, Paul Fisher, the Stinger product manager for Kia Motors, it's been a really good interview. I appreciate it. Thanks so much for sharing all this information about the new Stinger. Best of luck on the revamped 2022 model. I'm sure it will sell well. It seems like it's even more of a value than ever before. So thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me, Jack. I really had fun.
I'm glad. And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. And that was our interview with Paul Fisher, the product planning manager on the Kia Stinger. We thank him so much for being with us and sharing his insights on that and the Kia K5 and other vehicles within the Kia lineup. I also want to thank Chris Teague for being with us, our inimitable co-host, Chris Teague, out of the state of Maine these days. Thanks so much for being with us, Chris.
Thank you so much for having me, Jack, and thanks everybody for listening. And I will say, if you liked what you heard and you want to hear more, please go ahead and hit like and subscribe wherever you're getting your podcasts, and that will help us continue to grow and bring more people along for the ride.
Absolutely true. If you like the show, please pass it along to a friend or acquaintance or just somebody you meet on the street who might want to hear a car show that we do every week and talk about cars for real people. And please check out my book, The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. I think it might help you out and give you some information that could make your personal life that much better, not to mention your professional life. So check that out. It's available at bookstores everywhere and, of course, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And thanks so much for being with us. You're the reason we do what we do here on America on the Road. So we thank you for listening. We thank Mercury Insurance for helping to sponsor this podcast. And we look forward to seeing you again next time on America on the Road. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much money you could save. Get a quote today at mercuryinsurance.com.